Hey, it's Bobby Bones. If you're a veteran or if you've got a family member or friend who served, I want to tell you about Safeguard Veterans. Sometimes the hardest part isn't asking for help, it's knowing where to turn. Safeguard Veterans connects veterans, families, and caregivers with local support and resources that understand military life. And when you're talking to people who understand those experiences, finding the right support can feel a whole lot easier. Visit safeguardveterans.net and click on your city. Safeguard Veterans, any door. The right support.
Hey, Margaret.
Hi there.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for doing the interview. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
I wanted to, first of all, I want to ask you something. Does anyone ever call you anything besides Margaret? I know that your parents call you Moran, but I do.
Yes.
Do you have a nickname or anything like that your friends call you?
You know, Kathy Griffin calls me Maggie.
Really?
Yeah, she's probably the only person who does. It never really stuck.
Maggie.
Sometimes I have been called Peg every once in a while. But, you know, in general...
people call you Margaret.
It's kind of been Margaret. It's kind of formal. I'm a little bit of a formal person.
Really, for a very informal person, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Your name.
So there's a kind of formality that the name is sort of, you know, they say the whole thing. Or, you know, even like the whole thing, like Margaret Choate, like it's like kind of always been... maybe one name.
Right.
Instead of the first name or
the
last name.
Cool. Well, I want to tell you, I was reading your blog, actually. I've been reading it for months now, since I think December.
Okay.
And I think you're a really good writer. Do you write?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Do you write a lot? Or, I mean, is it something you've done for a while?
Yeah. It's actually, I've been writing, you know, I've been blogging for, you know, good... at least a good 10 years, although it's pretty sporadic sometimes too. You know, like I'll go for a long period without writing, but then lately, I guess since like November or so, I've been trying to realize my writerly potential, and also, you know, the way that writing is changed a lot, the way that we read. Mostly people are reading blogs, and they're not really reading books in the same way. And so I thought I'd like to write a book, but I think it's more effective to just be blogging every day, and then you can get my blogs on Kindle and go back and read. And, you know, I kind of started off as being really a good source of early obituaries.
Mm-hmm.
I still think that's probably one of my best things, but... in general, like writing about this stuff that happens, like in social, kind of, like in pop culture, like it's also good. Helps me write jokes, but a lot of the writing too is not really funny. It's pretty serious social commentary.
Yeah, yeah.
So I like having that venue. It helps me organize my thoughts about issues. And,
right.
You know, it's a good tool for me. So that usually, like, when I go to write jokes about something, I'll write about the subject entirely and then pick out what I would do jokes about. And so that's what the writing is for.
Gotcha.
And I do it every day, and it's pretty effortless. Sometimes some of these, sort of these entries take about 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So... I'm pretty sure, like, if I keep at it, I'll win a Pulitzer Prize. I'm pretty sure, like, one of those things, like, yeah, if you give it, okay. I think if you give one for online journalism, but they don't necessarily have one for blogging, but I want them to create one.
They should, totally.
Yeah.
And you should win.
Yeah, I think they will.
Well, it's Valentine's Day now. Today's Valentine's Day, and I read your blog, you know, about your past with Valentine's Day and your monster, as you called it. And
mm-hmm.
What are your feelings about Valentine's Day today?
Well, I mean, I think it's, you know, again, it's one of those created holidays that unfortunately makes people feel really bad. You know, a lot of people have a lot of negativity around the day because it focuses mostly on what you don't have. And then so people who do have that or you know, a relationship they want to celebrate, it kind of forces this obligation on you to spend a lot of money and spend a lot of time celebrating that when really your relationship should be celebrated every day.
Absolutely.
It's kind of like Christmas, you know, in the same way you have all of this expectation around the day to spend money and it's kind of like a consumerist holiday. But I really resent being a child and kind of being forced to be involved in this holiday when we really are not. I think it's inappropriate for children to have to participate, and so that's what that writing that was about. Because I remember there's cars, and I don't know if they do that today for kids, but I think it's really appropriate.
Yeah, it's like a horrible experience for most people when you're a kid to do that.
Well, also growing up gay and growing up like bullied, and then you know, so now I want to take all those experiences and kind of put them out there. Like, I think when you grow up and you're bullied, you never get over it. And I don't feel like, as an adult, I need to get over it. And I have a perfect platform to call out and blame people that were bullied. And, you know, really, really, like, lash out as an adult in the full force. Because I have no concept of forgiveness or arising above anything. Like, I think it's really funny to say childish and be mad still, and that's a good way to heal.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think even as an adult, I think people who've been bullied or who are an outcast or whatever as a child, as I was as well, I think you grow up and I think you still harbor that resentment to some extent. And I think if you have somewhere to express it, it's great. And so you do have this great platform. And do you think, you know, when you see some sort of injustice now, whether it's something small or big, do you think that's what kind of drives you now to speak out about it?
Yeah, and also share my own experience with that type of injustice and let people know that you can survive it and that there is no need to rise above it, that there is no need to feel like you have to be the better person. In any way, like, I think I totally advocate, like, harboring anger and resentment. I totally advocate lashing out in anger. I think that these things are really powerful and really fun. Because a lot of times we're told that, oh, we shouldn't be angry. It hurts you more than it hurts them. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. It's really fun. The opposite is what I've been taught in, like, kind of a new age way that anger is a destructive force. I think it's just another force that we can use.
I couldn't agree with you more. Are you still married, by the way? Because I know you were married. You're still married. Okay. So your relationship with your husband, what's that like today? I mean, I know that you guys had an open relationship, or tell me about that.
Well, it is. It's great. And we are really happy. And I think it's like we have the ideal relationship. You know, we have total connection and commitment, and that's why we laugh, and that's why we're happy. You know, that's like, but that doesn't include sexual monogamy, because I don't think that is an appropriate thing to ask of anyone. And people don't understand what that means. I can't really illustrate it any further than I'm totally committed and totally in this marriage I've been in, and we've been married since 2003, but we were together since 1999. So I feel like I know what works, and it works for me, and we'll stay together. You know, it's a good thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if it works for somebody, why question it? I think a lot of people, especially conventional or conservative people, certainly question people's relationships that don't, you know, coincide with the quote-unquote norm. And you seem to, obviously, well, you don't seem to. You are definitely someone I would consider an iconoclast and someone who's an outsider or something. Would you consider yourself, I mean, I think I know the answer to this, an outsider or an outcast? And if you do, what do you think makes you such?
I definitely, I guess I do consider myself an outsider, but then also I'm able to kind of move in circles where I'm definitely listened to, and I'm definitely, my opinions are projected and that, you know, they're valuable to people. So it's an outsider perspective that is very insider also, because I do have a platform to be heard.
Right. Yeah. And you think that you have, I think your entire career so far, I mean, do you think that's sort of been the driving force? Is to, what would you say has been the message of your career? If you could say there's one message, or, you know, in a sentence or a phrase, what would you use to describe your career and your point you're making?
I think that it's just that everybody can do it, that if you have the desire to be an artist, or that you can be, and that the most important thing is that you're doing what you want. You know, that's like what I've always done in my life, is I do things as I want, and I don't let things hold me back. Or, you know, like when I started, there were no people that looked like me in the industry that I'm in, but I didn't let that hinder my enthusiasm or my ambition. And so I think a lot of, especially a lot of immigrant families, like Asian Americans in particular, like, they expect a lot from their children, and they don't allow their kids to go into professions that are risky, or that they don't understand, like art or music or anything like comedy. So a lot of people abandon their dreams to please their family, and then are wake up in their 40s thinking, I've lived a life that I've never wanted for myself, and I don't know what to do now. So I try to get people to reject that and do what they want with their life, because I always did what I wanted with my life.
Yeah.
And since I did, I got what I wanted.
Exactly. And that's a great lesson, don't you think, for people? I think that's a great lesson. Do you, what are your thoughts? You know, we're coming up on an election season or whatever, the whole Obama thing, his performance over the past 4 years, or and, you know, what are your thoughts on him in the White House and moving forward?
I'm really happy with Obama, and I've been at the White House, and I've talked with him, and I have friends in the administration, and I helped get him elected. You know, I was part of the whole campaign trail. Like, I was there, and I feel like he's still gonna win. He's gonna go another term, and it's gonna be great. I feel like there's no contest. I don't know why the GOP even tries, because everybody they put in front of us is terrible. And I think it's like, people have a lot of frustration still with Obama, but he had a lot of things to clean up and a lot of things to take care of. And I, you know, the thing about Obama is I want him to be more vocal towards marriage equality.
Yes.
And in general, be better at passing legislation to help, you know, like, help people, like, with hate crimes, you know, help people be prosecuted more for hate crimes, including including the language that will protect LGBT people. Like, it's a very important thing that if we change some of this legislation, we also need to have marriage equality. But I've seen some positive things, like, you know, there is overturning Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That's a big deal. He should really pay more attention to the Occupy movements, which are not gone away. The press seems to feel that Occupy is over, but it's not. It's still happening in a lot of places. And so, you know, there's things that Obama can do, but I feel like he's done a great job, and I look forward to another term. And I'm definitely going to be there to help in any way that I can. You know, this is an administration that a lot of us have a lot of invested in, you know, like a lot of personal dream invested in it and hope. So I feel strongly that it's going to be another 4 years, and it'll be really, really good.
I hope you're right. do you think that the people like the Republican Party, well, the Republican Party, the right-wing Republican Party, homophobic people, evangelical Christians, et cetera, I mean, and I'm seriously asking you this question. I mean, this question, honestly, not just as a joke, but do you think that they have mental issues? I mean, honestly, do you think that they have mental issues, or you think it's just seriously a difference of opinion? Because it seems to me that when you present them with the facts, they ignore them. What do you think?
Yeah, it's both having like mental issues, and also they have a difference of opinion. But it's also the fact that they feel like they're disappearing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that the fact
right.
that they feel like when your beliefs and your people and your way of life is becoming extinct and it's already endangered, it's a terrifying place to be. And so they're trying to hang on to their family values, hang on to what has traditionally been the ideology of their family, so that they don't disappear. Like, they're like starting to experience what gays and people of color and
mm-hmm.
all of, like, women have experienced for a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I was thinking about, like, you know, when when I was really, really young, I was with this girl, and we were at a nightclub, and, this old man was trying to hit on us, and we were making fun of him, and basically making him feel like he didn't exist,
mm-hmm.
you know, like he was invisible. And, like, when we went outside of the club, it was totally deserted, really late, and then he was waiting for us with a tire iron, and he was trying to attack us. And, like, I realized, because he felt for a moment what I had felt for a lifetime.
Exactly.
And he could not take it. Like, he could not take non-existence. Like, he could not take being taken seriously. He
mm-hmm.
could not. The only thing he could do was attack.
Lash out.
Mm-hmm. And, like, so that's, like, I think that's a good comparison to conservatives. Like, when they feel like what we felt forever, they can't take it. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
We've taken it for so long, we're so used to it. You
exactly.
know? So that's what I think is going on. That's why they lash out so violently with their language.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they are so crazy. And I have compassion
mm-hmm.
for them, because it's like, I know what it's like. I've been there. And I don't want to be this way anymore. And that's why, you know, I know that's why you're feeling that way. So that's the thing. I think about conservatives with a lot of compassion, because I know what it's like to be extinct. No, extinct isn't even the right word, because it was like we never even existed.
Invisible, maybe.
Yeah, invisible.
Right.
That's what they feel.
That's a brilliant observation, yeah, and I completely agree with you. I think that that's absolutely true, and I think that that is why they are so vehemently against, you know, us gays or lesbians or people of color or whatever the case may be. I think that, you know, you have been sort of you've been a champion for people like me and people who are like yourself or whatever, and I think that I think that you've been an incredible kind of a beacon of light, sort of in the cesspool of I don't know, Hollywood or whatever you want to call it. But and so whenever people watch you, I think they feel like they know you, of course, and they love you and et cetera. So I think, I mean, do you think that you've been do you realize, I should say, the effect that you have on your audience and people who really adore you?
Well, it's wonderful. I think it's really magical. Like, I feel really good about it, and I feel really like if I can help people feel positively, then that's really lovely. Like, I get a lot of joy from it. I mean, I don't really know the extent of it. Like, I just try to do good work, and because it makes me feel good, and then if I can, like, work something out, like, in my head. Like, things like, even, like, on my blog, which I'm talking about a lot on stage, is, like, with the whole Adele and Karl Lagerfeld thing. Like, I got so upset when he said that she was a little bit fat, because it reminded me of all the times
mm-hmm.
where people say, oh, you're beautiful, but you're fat. Like, as if that was a compliment. And so I was, like, reacting to all the stuff, and then I, you know, you have this groundswell of, like, people saying, yes, I can't stand it when people say that, and then... So when people say stuff like that in the press, it really affects everybody in a way that it's like it reminds you of all the things that happened to you,
yeah.
And it makes you so angry. And so also it made me really doubly angry, because I'm a big fan of Carl's
Yes. So it kind of hurt in a way.
Hurt.
Yes.
Yeah, I was really hurt by it. But it's like you have the ability to, like, get really angry and put your words into a kind of a poetic jumble that makes sense to other people, mm-hmm. then it's really empowering.
Absolutely.
So, I'm very happy, like, you know, that if I get to represent people or whatever, I'm mostly just trying to represent myself and trying to make myself feel better. But if that can help others, that's phenomenal.
And yeah, I know that you've said many times, you know, in interviews before in the past about when you were an All-American Girl and how a producer or a friend or something had said to you on the show that your head was too big to be on the screen or whatever. And mm-hmm. And so I remember that from your book, I'm the One That I Want, I think. And you talked about that. My question to you was going to be, I actually recently saw an episode of All-American Girl. I caught it on TV like a few weeks ago, and there was a in the episode, you were dating some guy, I don't know, and you said, well, my head's just too big or something like that. The thing I wanted to ask you is, was that something, if you remember or at all, that you yourself put in to be self-deprecating, or is that something that they put in, or do you even remember in the show? I'm just curious because I know...
I don't remember.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of stuff, I have no recollection of it. I don't know what it is. I think, I honestly, like, don't remember stuff, and I think it had to do with the fact that I was dieting so much, like, mm-hmm. through that whole period, that even after I really was not eating, and then I had to be hospitalized and stuff, and even after that, like, I never really quite got over it, you know, and I wasn't eating, and I was taking a lot of diet pills.
Yeah.
And I think because of all of my drug use and stuff, then I don't have, I lost quite a lot of my memory. I mean, I have a really, really laser-like memory where I can kind of, it's almost like a time machine. And there's huge chunks of maybe between 1994 and 95 that I really have no recollection of. And that,
wow.
I think that's really drugs.
Yeah.
And not even good drugs. It's totally like diet pills.
Wow. That's horrible.
Weird. Yeah. It's sad because I could write and actually be a lot more, you know, articulate about some of those things. But there's really blank spots when I try to go back and think, and I know that it is from drug use.
Right.
Well, it's sad.
Yeah, it's very sad. And do you think you've made peace now, though, with your weight, whatever that may be, or do you still struggle with some sort of, you know, arbitrary standard of beauty, or what do you feel about that now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I still definitely struggle with it. I mean, I think, like, what I have is a disease. I mean, I have a disease of anorexia and bulimia, and, you know, you really don't... there's no cure. You always have the disease. It's just whether you're sort of in remission or not. I guess I'm mm-hmm. kind of in a sort of place where I'm not affected daily by it. And I'm also older, and if you're older, you are getting more comfortable in your skin. And I'm at that point, I think.
Yes.
But whenever it's not called to be discussed, I get really upset. Like, if it's, you know, like with the Adele thing, like, whenever mm-hmm. I am talking about it, I get just as upset as if it's happening to me right then. But, like, I have a relative peace with it, but that only comes with the fact that I'm older and have to kind of deal with the age thing, which is another thing that doesn't really affect me in the way that it affects a lot of women. They get really scared. And then a lot of women my age, too, and my peers are very, very into plastic surgery,
mm-hmm.
which I can't really get into. Like, that's why I get tattooed. It's my own way of getting plastic surgery. It's my own way of staying younger.
Yeah.
Without actually going into an area of plastic surgery.
Yeah, and do you think that the industry has changed at all in terms of that? Or you think it's exactly the same for the most part about weight and that sort of thing?
About weight? Oh, no, it's not changed.
Yeah.
I think what has happened is that there has been this idea or understanding that, oh, we can make money by showing people who are
different,
larger, or mm-hmm. we can make money by, or there is the thing that there's undeniable talent. you know, that
like
Adele is an undeniable talent that you can't, you can't say it. But like stuff, and the thing about it is Adele is so extroverted, she can't be pushed to the background like Carney Wilson. You know, like Wilson's great. Part of that greatness was Carney Wilson.
Yes.
Carney Wilson was never allowed to, like, they would do the videos and the girls, like, they would be, like, having boys and they're troubled with boys, and then Carney would be with, like, a dog. It was like, why can't you show Carney with a boy just like you show the other two with
boys? Like,
Carney's actually the prettiest one. And the one that is like the real legend. She's Brian Wilson's daughter. You know, like that. She's the legend in the group.
Exactly.
And you focus on the untalented other two.
No.
Like, you know. They don't matter. Carney's a voice.
Yeah, and it's funny. They would have like a video on the beach or something, and in the front, between the first two are in the front, the skinny ones, and then she's way in the back, in the background or something, and it's hilarious. Yeah, it's so true.
She was the voice.
Yeah.
So I would like watch that and feel like, even though I'm the talented one, I'm going to be the one behind the tree.
Exactly.
Like, even though I'm the talented one, they're not going to show me with the boy. They're going to show me with a puppy, which I love dogs.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, that's fine. But it's like, I just feel like now entertainment world or whatever, whoever makes those decisions is realizing, oh, shit, we can make money off.
Yeah, and
somebody who looked real.
Do you think that Drop Dead Diva may be a good indication of that?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love
Brooke, and I love the show for those reasons.
And do you film that in Atlanta?
Mm-hmm.
And do you fly out there? Or do you live there during the filming?
Yeah, I have an apartment there. I have a really great place to live there. I have a bunch of wonderful friends.
Oh, awesome.
My fourth year of living there. I moved from Peachtree City, which is, Peachtree City is like the capital of the Tea Party.
Oh, really? Lovely.
But it's weird because it's like in Peachtree City, it's like you see bumper stickers on cars, but they don't put them on the bumper. They put them on the inside of the window, so they're not actually stuck to the car. And there's stuff like Pitbull and lipstick. You know, like Sarah Palin clothes.
Yes.
Like, that kind of stuff. And that's all over the place. But they don't put them on their cars. They put them inside the car inside the window so they don't have to commit to their feelings.
Right. Or maybe they're just afraid someone's going to hate them and tear it off. I don't know. But
yeah, they want to take them down or whatever. But I did live in Peachtree for 2 years, but it was too stifling and conservative.
Yeah, of course.
And so I live in Atlanta, which is really, really gay and really fun.
Oh, awesome. Hotlanta, yeah.
Yeah,
awesome.
It's really Hotlanta.
Okay, well, I've got a couple more questions for you, and I'll let you go. I just wanted to ask you about acting in film or anything like that, because I haven't seen you in anything like a big movie or anything in a long time, and I've seen you in a couple of small films, which is fine. I'm just curious if you have anything on the horizon in that arena.
No, I'd love to do big movies. I would really love it. It's kind of taken me out, like in the last 4 years. I've been touring so much because I'm on a show for 6 months a year, and then the rest of the time I'm on tour.
Right.
So that sort of like doesn't leave me any time to pursue like big films or something like that, which I'm totally up for. Totally would love to do, but it's like the way that my years have been structured, it's been hard for the last like 4 years. And also I've been touring a lot internationally and spending a lot of time in Europe and spending a lot of time in England and Australia, and so that has taken a lot of the year for me. But yeah, it's like something that I would love to do. I haven't done a really big movie maybe since like 17 again or something, you know, like that.
Wow.
that was really a long time ago now, so I would love to do more. Usually people just call me up and
say, can you be in this movie or whatever.
You know, I never have been around
to do it.
So yeah, I really want to, you know, I'm trying. I was trying to do like Three Stooges, and they're trying to do like all these other things I want to do, but it's like, it's busy when you're in a series and also trying to manage the other which is my main job, which is, doing stand-up comedy, and then all my sort of underneath job, which is doing music, which I still am doing a lot of, guesting on people's albums and stuff. So it's like very, things get kind of lost because you kind of do so many things.
Yeah, but I mean, I think, that's just a testament to how talented you are. You can do all of these different things, and that's amazing, but people want you, so that's good. I was going to ask you about your album, or the one song you did, I'm Sorry, in the video and all that. Oh my God, I love that video. The song's hilarious.
Thank you.
It just cracked me up, but I wanted to ask you about your singing. You really have a great voice, and I know, how did you even get into doing that?
Well, I come from a church family. There's a lot of singing in my house. My mother is a singer. My mother's also a really good guitarist. And my father's a pianist.
Wow.
And so, I grew up around a lot of music. That's sort of what happens when you're in a church family, is you end up doing a lot of music. So I always knew that I could sing, and I always loved it. But stand-up comedy was really what really drove me, and I felt like, well, I have a decent voice, but I don't have the kind of voice. It would take, for me to really have the voice that I had the potential of having, it would take a huge lifestyle change, not drinking and not smoking. And I don't do a lot of that anyway, but, the purity of a voice is really reflects the purity of a life. And, I mean, that's I feel so bad about Whitney Houston the great responsibility of being the custodian of a voice like that is almost as if it's not worth it.
Yeah.
Because it takes so much your physical health and, in regards to your instrument, it's like, You pay such a high tax, high tariff to maintain that voice. I mean, even if she had never smoked or drank, whatever, I don't think she could have sustained the voice for all these years anyway.
It's a lot of pressure, too.
So it's a lot of pressure to do it, and people don't appreciate the value of a voice that ages.
Right.
And her voice, it would have aged beautifully, but it would have been still criticized,
Of course.
It would have changed.
It's not the same as she was when she was 20 or whatever, yeah.
No. And the great divas, those women that were the great, those voices, they age in a way that is so powerful, but she wasn't, I think, willing to or able to endure what, all that it would have taken, I totally understand her struggle, from the beginning, to have that kind of success and to have to, feel like you have to maintain it.
Yeah, it's sad, and it's very sad. Especially for someone who had an addiction and it was, like I said, a lot of pressure for her. Okay, so I just have two more questions for you. One is, I want to ask you, if you could tell me how you think you've evolved over the past 20 years or so since you started your career, 20, 30 years, whatever it's been.
30. That's so strange. It's okay. I think I'm much, much more able to put my feelings into words now. I know more words. Mm-hmm. So that has been helpful.
Yes.
I'm also better at trying to do master things. I'm better at mastering certain kinds of storytelling and certain kinds of singing and so I'm better at learning things and becoming them and being able to utilize them in my work. I think I'm more joyful overall, and also I allow unhappiness to kind of be in my life and not freak out about it.
That's huge.
Yeah, I think that people get really upset and then feel like unhappiness is an unwelcome part of life, but it's just a part of life.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can accept it as part of life, you can actually kind of learn to deal with it.
How wise and sage of you.
It's really wise. So it's now I realize when I'm unhappy, it's not clinical depression.
Yeah, exactly.
Unhappiness. If you go, I'm bummed about something, people go, I got to go on meds and I got to go to therapy and I got to go deal with it. But actually, that's just a natural occurring state.
The ebb and flow of life.
So when you can recognize that. Of course, there's people that have depression and that's real.
Of course, yes.
but I don't think I have that. I realize it's just part of the way that things are. And I just take it kind of in stride. Like, I really enjoy my career and I enjoy my life. And, you know, there's always this idea, like, people I find around me are so ambitious. They want to do so much and they can't understand why anybody wouldn't want more and be on top, and if they're not on top, and I don't understand what they define success is. Like, I feel very successful all the time, so I don't know. I'm not sure what people around me are chasing all the time.
Right.
So I don't know.
Like,
I
feel
like people around me succeed, that it makes me so joyous that I'm like, either, like, it makes me cry. Like, the one example is Kurt Sutter.
Mm-hmm.
He writes that show, Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
Which I love because I ride motorcycles and I like, totally am super into bikes. And so, like, I see him and I've known him forever. And, like, I have so much joy when I see people that are really, really successful that, you know, I get hard. And then a lot of people that are in my profession, when they see other people that succeed, they're jealous.
Yes.
And, like, mad. And I'm like, how could you be jealous or mad? Like, I'm so happy for people that I've seen and grown up with. So, I don't know, like, I have a lot of joy.
That's good. That's very zen of you. And that's very, you know, kind of just, I don't know, whatever the word is, but I love that. You're so...
I'm mad that Kathy didn't win the Grammy again, though, because she got nominated 3 years in a row.
I know.
She didn't get a Grammy just for being nominated 3 years.
Hello, I know. Tell me about it. That's an accomplishment.
That's like the miracle. That's been a miracle. Nobody's done that. That's been a miracle. Not even in music has that ever happened.
I know.
And comedy is so much harder, and to have nominated for a different album 3 years in a row.
Exactly. Yeah, I love her, of course. Yeah. She deserves it.
Oh, it's so beautiful. Like, but, you know, I think maybe because she's such a, so critical of the industry, that I think that the industry gets mad.
But isn't that so childish?
I don't know if we're being critical of her.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm gonna make her an award in my medal shop. I have my motorcycle medal shop, so I have a welding. I'm gonna weld her a Grammy.
You should totally do that. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, last question for you is, where do you see yourself at 60? I'd like to know where Margaret Cho sees herself when she's 60 years old.
Oh, God, you know what's scary is that it's not that far off. And, I mean, it's a stone's throw. That is down the block. I mean, you're talking about next week. And I feel like I'm going to be doing the same thing, like, which is, like, really kind of, you know, possibly, I think I might have a Moto Guzzi, my motorcycle by then, which I'm trying to go from a smaller engine to a larger engine, that sort of thing. I may buy a Harley next, or I may buy a Moto Guzzi.
So God.
That'll probably be my 6 year old. I think it's 60, I'm not sure, because I feel like it's going to be the same thing. I might, you know, at that point, really consider putting a pool on my property. so that, for, you know, aqua aerobics, because of a reality, I need some sort of cushion for my joint. 60, I really do plan on kind of doing the same thing, you know, maybe more of the same thing, maybe acting more, maybe certainly writing more, and trying to do different types of writing. Like, I'm trying to write, I'd like to do a television series, you know, to write a show like that, or write scripts, you know, because I love writing, and so I want to take my talent in that and use it in different formats. You know, I definitely feel like that's a good thing to do. And I'd like to write more songs and sing more. And I just recorded a duet with Ken Stringfellow from the Posies, and, you know, we were singing a lot of country, which is really oddly somehow the best place where my voice is suited.
Yeah.
So country is, you know, I may be doing a lot more in Nashville where I have a lot of friends and stuff. So
how many Asian chicks do country?
I don't think there's any.
Exactly. No, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I'm just saying you're always breaking barriers. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm like the Jeremy Lin of country music. Like, I'm really weirdly good at it, and people are like freaking out. Like, why are you good at this?
This makes no sense to me. It does not compute. Yeah.
There's no reason for me to be good at this, but I really strangely am, and it's a kind of undeniable that people really can't figure out. Like, this is the strangest thing that, you know, it is like a voice that is really pretty good.
It's
really on the level of like Emmylou Harris or Patsy Cline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's so unexpected.
It is. But that's,
people are like, I don't know what to do with it.
But that's the beauty. That's the beauty of life. That's the beauty of your career. That's the beauty of, you know, just having, just, you're unexpected. Everything about you is unexpected, and that's what makes you so awesome. So,
thank you.
Yeah, I thank you so much for talking to us, and I really appreciate it.
Yes.
And are you going to have a great Valentine's Day today, or what are you going to do?
Yes,
anything?
Yes. We just had a very, very lavish breakfast.
Oh.
And then I have a little more work today, and then we're going to end our work day at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and then just probably spend the rest of the day like just being, you know, together.
Awesome. Well, I hope you have a great day, Margaret. Thank you for talking to me, Margaret. I really appreciate it. We love you so much.
Love you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The hardest part was figuring out where to go. I didn't want to explain military life before talking about what I needed. Safeguard Veterans connected me to people and resources that understood military life. That made taking the next step easier.
You served others. Let your community support you. Visit safeguardveterans.net and click on your city. Safeguard Veterans. Any door, the right support.